Greetings, humans. You have entered the Command Zone, your destination for all aspects of Elder Dragon Highlander. Enjoy your stay.
Hey, everybody! You're listening to an episode of The Command Zone. It is an episode, not the next episode, not this week's episode. It is the episode of The Command Zone. I'm your host, Jimmy.
What happened?
What happened?
How's it? It's AAA Josh Lee Kwai.
Wait, AAA Josh Lee Kwai?
I don't know. You were saying A a lot. I just wanted to be part
right.
of the club.
I thought you were the auto insurance club, AAA. Is that the club? That was good. We have a fun episode today. We're back to talking top 10 cards. Today we're covering black.
The top 10 black cards in
EDH, we've decided, has just become a single word called Erch. You guys want to play some Erch? You,
just,
me.
It sounds really inviting, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Me, you. You want to play some Erch?
Erch. Yeah, man, I'm super down for Erch. It's my favorite part of the day.
Before we get to our main topic, we would like to make a request. We haven't asked for this in a while. If you have not reviewed us on iTunes yet, you can really help the show out by going there and filling out a review, not just giving us a 5-star rating, but also actually typing out a quick review. Does
Hold
help
on.
The show.
What if they don't want to give us a 5-star rating?
That's true. Then don't even go. No, that's
fine. Don't go. Just forget this whole section existed.
Okay, for those of you that want to give us a 5-star rating, this subgroup, go to iTunes, and writing a review really helps. It helps the show get out there. It's the way that iTunes sort of like ranks things when you run a search. Mm-hmm. It really helps the exposure. So people are asking us all the time like how they can help the show out and get the word out there. This is a really good way.
Yeah, definitely. And we like reading it, and also it's a great, makes me feel great.
That's true. Reading the reviews
really
makes
cool.
me personally feel good, so that's also another reason to do it.
Gives me fuel to keep the Command Zone podcast engine a roaring.
Our engine, yeah. No, wait. I want to redo our engine noise.
Ding. That'd be funny if you just have the most badass car and your bell is just like the bing.
That's your horn, you mean?
Yeah, everyone's like, is dinner served back there? So black is the second to last color that we've done a top 10 list. There's one left, there's blue. Obviously, we saved the best for last, right?
Also, blue is kind of the hardest. There's just a lot of good cards in
there. There are. Actually, black was hard, too, because I found, we'll talk about when we get there, but there are a lot of things.
I thought black was going to be easier because I was like, I don't play a ton of black cards. And then I was like listing them, and I was like, crap, I have 50 cards on my list.
Yeah, yeah. So. Mine had about 20, so it was hard cutting them down. The way that we make these lists is the same for all the episodes. It's what we believe to be the top 10 black cards, and we try and keep the price tag in general under $25 because, I mean, there are some cards that, of course, are really good and really powerful but cost $90 to $100, and we don't think that's realistic to make a list of those cards because if you want those cards, you can just look them up. It's not hard to find.
Or you can listen to our High Rollers episode. Which
High Rollers! Cha-ching!
Yeah. In fact, a high rolling card like the Abyss, which mm-hmm. I believe we talked about, would probably make the list, but it's a couple $100, and that's just, it doesn't make sense to put that on the top of the list because you can't get it.
You can't get it, and also it's a very specific card that's hard to get a hold of. The other thing, before we get into the criteria of the list, is like, guys, we know Demonic Tutor is going to be number one. It should be number one, but we're not going to put it there.
Yeah, we just assume, it's not fun to talk about the card that we know is going to be number one before even going into it, because Jimmy and I make our lists separately and we mm-hmm. don't look at each other's lists, and then now we're comparing to see how close we are, how far apart we are, and we just both knew Demonic Tutor would be number one, so we're just putting that off to the side. In fact, I put all the tutors off to the side, Vampiric Tutor and everything, and just said, yeah, those are sort of the best cards in black, but those aren't fun to talk about, they're not interesting. So we're going to cover the non-tutor cards, basically.
Yeah, exactly. And the other big thing is that we did this with artifacts as well. There was a little bit of an outcry because we didn't put Sol Ring on the list, but it's the same idea. You know, if you wanted to talk about most powerful vintage cards in the world, you could be like, Black Lotus is number one, and everyone would know that. It's
Ancestral.
Could be Ancestral, yeah. But, I mean, the whole idea is we don't want to bore you guys with the number one slot. We can just get it out of the way. A tutor is incredibly powerful because you get to put any card in your deck into your hand.
We all know this. If you listen,
we all know this.
Yeah, if you listen to the show for this long, then you know that probably would have been our number one, but we're disallowing it for this discussion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we want to make it a little more interesting. So what are some of the criteria we use to judge a car, Josh?
I'm going to go over this really fast because we've talked about it for the other four top 10 lists we've done. It's the same. It's
three, actually.
Well, we did artifacts.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So we'll have to do gold colors as well soon.
Well, yeah, we'll probably have to, we'll talk about that. That's going to get complicated.
Yeah.
Mana cost factors into it, so it's hard for a card that costs 10 mana to be on the list. It would have to be extremely powerful. How useful is the card in a multitude of decks and color combinations? So it can't just be useful in mono black or just be useful only if you're pairing black with white. It has to be useful with all the colors. Quadrant theory, which we talked about with Marshall Sutcliffe when he was on, I believe that was episode 9.
Mm-hmm.
What are the quadrants again? It's
setup phase / beginning phase. The whether you're ahead, whether you're behind, and whether you're at stasis. Yeah,
yeah. So those are the four quadrants. It's how useful is a card in each of those quadrants. And then does the card either enable or combat a strategy that's prevalent in the format? So. Mm-hmm. Token decks are prevalent. Voltron decks are prevalent. There's a lot of board wipes in the format. Does it give you mana ramp or card draw, which are the two things every deck needs? So that would bump it up or down on the list depending on which one of those categories it hits.
Yep, definitely.
All right. Do you want to dive right into it?
Yeah, who wants to go first?
I'll go first. So my number 10, I said Shieldred Whispering One.
Oh boy. So Shieldred is I'd say probably one of the more popular mono black commanders if you want to go this route. But Shieldred is a Praetor, and if you guys know, the Praetors were a legendary creature cycle that were in New Phyrexia, I believe. Other notable Praetors in the cycle that you may know are Elishnorn
and Gyngataxias.
Oh god, Gyngataxias.
Yeah, there's one for each color. And Shieldred is one of the better ones for sure. One of the most played cards. Almost every mono black deck would play her.
Every black deck would play her.
It's true. Do you want to read her?
Yeah, she's 5/2 black for 7 total. Legendary creature, Praetor. She's a 6/6 with Swamp Walk, and it says, at the beginning of your upkeep, return target creature card from your graveyard to the battlefield. And it also says, at the beginning of each opponent's upkeep, that player sacrifices a creature. Whoa, that is huge.
It's two effects, and any one of them would be awesome, but she has them both. So
yeah.
You get a creature card from your graveyard.
And they lose a creature.
And they lose a creature every turn. Like,
so it's not just that they're losing one. You're going, if you're like, look at it in the scale, you're going way faster. You're separating yourself by two cards, essentially, each time that the trigger happens when they have to sacrifice a creature.
Yeah, incredibly powerful. An unchecked Shieldred just takes over the game.
Yeah, and when it comes to combating certain strategies, for instance, Voltron decks, this can be very powerful because if they're just about suiting up their one person to be super indestructible and all these other things, and you can't kill it with conventional means, well, sacrificing it, an edict effect. Yeah, it's definitely one of the ways to get around it.
When we were in Vegas, the Reverend in Fuego was playing his Shu Yun deck, which is basically a deck where you get Shu Yun out and then put a bunch of enchantments on Shu Yun, and then somebody put out a Shieldred. It was me. And literally, he just couldn't do anything because he can't cast his commander because he immediately has to sacrifice it the next turn.
Mm-hmm.
So, and his whole deck is just meant to like stack a bunch of stuff onto Shu Yun, but he couldn't do it. And it gets around hexproof and everything. So,
yeah, pretty intense. So, I agree. That's definitely in my top 10 list, potentially at a higher spot.
Yeah, you have it. I see it now. You have it higher.
Yeah, I do. My number 10 card, which I believe you have higher than I do, is Living Death. This is one of my favorite sorcery board wipes in black because it's not really a board wipe, and I think the card is great because it's one of those board wipes that you can really play around.
You can
play around your own card, which is something we talked about in the episode with Graham, which is oftentimes when you have a card that says kill all the creatures on the board and you have creatures in your hand and the ability to play that spell, you're going to want to play your creatures, for instance, after you cast it, or just not play out them out as much, knowing you're going to cast it in a future turn. And Living Death is a great example of a card that you definitely want to plan ahead for. It says each player exiles all creature cards from his or her graveyard, then sacrifices all creatures he or she controls, then puts all cards he or she exiled this way onto the battlefield.
It's a sorcery, by the way.
It's a sorcery, yeah, for 5 mana total.
Basically, everything you've got in play goes to the graveyard, and everything you've got in the graveyard comes into play, and that's for all players.
Every player, yeah.
Yeah, but the way that this generally works is you've got a deck that's just dumping stuff into the graveyard constantly, mm-hmm. and so when you do it, you get 20 things, and everybody else gets, you know, a few things that have happened to die in the game. So
yeah,
two or three things.
I mean, you can also do a lot of stuff like, for instance, you could attack someone really aggressively.
Yep.
You can trade off aggressively knowing that your creatures are going to come back. If you have more creatures with Enter the Battlefield effects, you're going to benefit from this a lot more.
Oh, if you just have like Grey Merchant of Asphodel.
Oh, yeah.
You can just kill everybody. That happens all the time with this
card.
That
happened in that same deck, same game with Shu Yun.
Yeah, because Grey Merchant basically deals damage to everybody equal to the amount of devotion to black you have.
Mm-hmm.
And since so many creatures are coming into play all at once, a lot of times you'll just be like, well, I have 30 pips.
Yeah.
So everybody takes 30 and I gain 120.
Yeah, this card's great in decks like Caridor. It's great in decks that use green just because they have cards like Eternal Witness that you can get back and get another card back. So I like this card a lot.
Yeah, it's very powerful. I have it higher on my list.
Oh, nice.
Okay, number nine.
Yes. What is your number nine, Josh?
My number nine is Kokusho, the Evening Star.
Used to be banned.
Used to be banned and was only recently unbanned. Kokusho is 4/2 black for a legendary creature, Dragon Spirit. He's a 5/5 with flying. When Kokusho, the Evening Star, dies, each opponent loses 5 life. You gain life equal to the life lost this way. So if there's four other players, you would gain 20 life and they would all lose 5.
This, pretty good.
Yeah, it's great. It really, the life gain is so huge. Also, just the ability to recur this out of your graveyard constantly with something like a Sack Outlet in like Shieldred or Caridor, those type of decks that can just play Kokusho. Like once you play Kokusho 3, 4, 5 times, it's just over.
Yeah.
You just win.
Yeah, and I would say the best way to use Kokusho is for when you can repeat his ability a few times.
Yep.
Because otherwise, it happening once is nice, and it's a 6-mana 5/5 flyer, which is also really good.
That usually gains you, in a game of Commander, 20 life or so. So even if you don't recur it, it's good.
Yeah, it's good just dying once.
Yeah.
But the best way to use it, obviously, and the reason why it was originally banned is because you could really abuse this effect if you built your deck around it.
Mm-hmm. What's your number nine, Jimmy?
My numero nino is Reanimate. And this is potentially a little controversial because it is a one-of effect. And usually we talk about these sorts of effects not being able to do multiple things or bigger things. Mm-hmm. It's not being that powerful. And you actually have a version of this card on your list that I think is potentially the better version. But Reanimate is a one black for a sorcery. It's like my reverse Path to Exile in black.
Yeah, yeah.
Put target creature card from a graveyard onto the battlefield under your control. You lose life equal to its converted mana cost.
So any graveyard.
Any graveyard, and you just lose life equal to its converted mana cost. Now, that usually isn't a big deal because you're not going to put anything bigger than like an 8, you know. But this is one of those great cards where you can get something back from your graveyard if it's early in the game. Sometimes you even let your general go to the graveyard so you can just get it back with the reanimate that same turn or whatever. I've done that definitely with my Marchesa deck a bunch of times. And in the late game, it gets just super nuts because someone's played a Consecrated Sphinx and it's been killed. Or someone's played a giant a Shieldred and it's been killed.
Well, you can also do stuff like you draw it in your opening hand. You just skip your first land drop, purposefully discard something huge. Then on turn 2, you play a swamp, reanimate something big, and you could have like a... You could like have like a 7-power creature out on turn 2.
You could have in the right deck, you could have a Consecrated Sphinx out in turn 2. You could have Shieldred out in turn 2, and you're kind of pretty much
win. If you have Shieldred
that
out on turn 2, I mean, somebody has to have a Path to Exile or something right now. Otherwise, how are they ever going to win? So, yeah, reanimate, you can do broken stuff.
Yeah, it's good in the early game, good in the late game. Good to just also use the best of someone else's deck if their creatures get removed, etc.
Yep, I really like it.
Nice.
It was, you're right, you know exactly what card, because when I'm making these lists, and I think you're probably the same way, there's certain slots I want to fill. I want to have a board wipe. I want to have some card draw. I want to have some mana ramp. And then I want to say, well, what's that color really known for? And black's really known for reanimating, to use the word.
Yeah.
Getting stuff out of your graveyard directly onto the battlefield. And so the slot that you use for that, I use for another card later, but definitely that needs to be represented.
Yeah,
because
in the black cards.
That's what black is, my next one is my mana ramp slot. So number 8 for me is Crypt Ghast. It's 3 and a black for a 2/2 spirit. It has extort, which is not that important, so I'm not gonna read it. Whenever it also says whenever you tap a swamp for mana, add black to your mana pool, so it doubles the amount of mana that all your swamps give you.
Importantly, a swamp.
Yes.
So it can be Blood Crypt counts. Badlands
counts. Yep, exactly. Mm-hmm. And you can tap the Badlands for red, but still also get a black with it because mm-hmm. it is a swamp. But you didn't. It doesn't say whenever you tap it for black mana. So also Urborg combos really well with this, which makes all your lands, everybody's lands into swamps also. But it's just really good mana ramp. And this is the way that black sort of does mana ramp. It's specifically for swamps. So Cryptgast is very, very strong. I would say if you're three color, you probably don't run Cryptgast. But if you're two or obviously mono, then you definitely run it.
Yeah, and it's a four mana creature that does this.
Yeah.
Usually this effect costs a lot more to get onto the battlefield.
Very true. And Extort, I didn't read it. I'll read it. Whenever you cast a spell, you may pay either a black or a white mana. If you do, each opponent loses one life, and you gain that much life. Now, you can play this in a mono black deck because that's reminder text. It's not rules text. Mm-hmm. But it is not a trifle. What happens is it really scales well with the amount of players there are. So
it's like a mini Kakusho.
Yeah, if there are four other players, any spell you play, you pay one extra mana, and you just gain four life, and everybody else loses one life. So that's not a trivial amount.
Yeah, especially if you're doing a deck that can like play cards out of your graveyard, right? You can.
Yeah.
That counts as well.
Yep.
So yeah, Cryptgast is very powerful. It's definitely it's like the number one, hey, I need more ramp in my mono black deck. Cryptgast it is.
Yep.
All right, so my number eight is actually gave two spots to board wipes for black because A, black doesn't have that many, and the one I'm about to mention is very specific.
Well, I actually gave two spots to board wipes too. So.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Nice. Right. Maybe we should have done three then. Black's Sun's Zenith.
Oh, yeah.
X black black for a sorcery. It says put X -1/-1 counters on each creature. Shuffle Black Sun's Zenith into its owner's library. So they don't want you recurring this spell for good reason.
It's super powerful.
It's super powerful. -1/-1 counters live there forever in general. They'll take off +1/+1 counters. And also, it's a good way to get rid of a card that is indestructible.
Yep.
It's a good way to get just you don't have to necessarily cast this to kill every creature. You can do this for like three. And you'll neuter and gimp some of the biggest creatures on the board just because that -3/-3 is pretty permanent and it's hard to get rid of the counters.
Yeah, I think that's actually a really big strong point for this card, which is that if you don't have the mana to kill everything, it still does really good things to, like, if you can only do it for six and there's a 7/7 out there, well, now it's a 1/1.
Yeah.
So you're not scared of it. It's fine.
It doesn't change the text on the card, but it's still turns a lot of stuff into non-threats.
I mean, most things that are utility are small, so they're going to die anyway. I mean, not all, but most things. So, yeah, this card. And the fact that it gets around indestructible is really what puts it.
I mean, combine something with this with, like, Massacre Worm or Elish Norn, and you can really destroy a lot of things.
Well, my number seven is actually my other board wipe.
Oh, nice.
My other board wipe? My first board wipe, but I do have two. But it's not Black Sun Zenith. I chose Decree of Pain.
Ooh.
Decree of Pain.
This is so good.
Yeah, it's 6/2 black for a sorcery. It says, destroy all creatures. They can't be regenerated. Draw a card for each creature destroyed this way.
Woo!
This
is
often
the audience applauding.
Yeah, this is often like draw 15 cards. It also has cycling. So for 3/2 black, cycling reads, discard this card, draw a card. A couple things about cycling. You can do it at instant speed, and it actually is not casting the spell, so it can't be countered. It's just you're cycling this card. You're putting it into your graveyard and then just drawing a card to replace it. It just costs you the 5 mana. But also, when you cycle Decree of Pain, all creatures get -2/-2 until end of turn.
Jeez.
So it's an uncounterable small board wipe.
Mm-hmm. A Massacre Worm.
Yeah, if you need that. Most of the time, you're just going to cast it for the 8, kill everything, and then draw a million cards. Because most of the time, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's my number seven.
Yeah, -2/-2 for everything, and you get to just cycle the card at instant speed without it being countered is really powerful, because if you're playing against like your Pinger deck or any deck with a token deck, guess what? Your Decree of Pain has two modes on it that are super awesome.
Yep.
Not to mention you can probably get this card back at some point if that's what you're trying to do.
Yeah, exactly. Because it's in your graveyard. It's not gone forever.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. And Black Sun Zenith definitely shuffles itself away. All right, I actually did put a tutor effect on my list, but it is...
But it's stapled onto a planeswalker.
It's stapled onto a planeswalker called Liliana Vess, 3/2 black, for a 5 converted cost planeswalker. She's been printed a bunch of times, actually, in M10, 11, Lorwyn, M15, in the dual decks. And she essentially is she's my favorite black planeswalker because she does a great job. It's one of the first cards I got as a gift as well. Her plus one says target player discards a card, which is powerful, but not really why you're playing the card here. Her minus two says search your library for a card, then shuffle your library and put that card on top of it. So a tutor. And her minus eight is put all creature cards from all graveyards onto the battlefield under your control, which isn't totally out of the realm of possibility because she starts with five. But most times you're going to be able to just essentially tutor twice with a planeswalker because she goes to three the first time and then goes to one the second time. Yep. So not many planeswalkers can do that where they do their minus ability twice in a row. Usually it's once and then they have to start plusing again to get back to it.
Yeah, and newsflash, a repeatable tutor. Pretty good. Yeah.
It does draw a lot of hate, but at the same time, I found that this card sometimes slips under the radar because the card goes to the top of your library. It's not necessarily into your hand.
It's not as scary as a lot of planeswalkers because you minus her right away, so the ultimate's really far away. They're not worried about that. And the plus is not super scary. I mean, nobody likes to discard a card, but one card in EDH against one player.
And you can do it to yourself, by the way, and then play reanimate. Yep. So
this card is very good.
Yeah, and it's my one tutor effect of the cards I have on my list because I like it quite a bit.
I, for a long time, was shuffling, where can I put her? She should be on there. Where is she? And then eventually I took her off the list entirely, but she was definitely in contention for me.
You've got another planeswalker on here that I did not have in contention.
This planeswalker is my number six. It's Soren Markov.
Soren. It looks like he's gunslinging in this picture.
It does.
By the way.
It looks like he's got a revolver and he's about to like go all Sundance Kid on me. Can I move when I shoot?
Do people know who Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid
is? If you have not seen Butch and Sundance, you need to go see that movie.
Yeah, Sundance Film Festival is named after it. Yep. Yeah, Robert Redford, one of his most famous roles.
One of the most famous endings of a movie of all time.
Mm-hmm. That's great.
Soren Markov is a planeswalker. He costs 3 and 3 black, so 6 total for a 4 loyalty planeswalker. His plus two is Soren Markov deals 2 damage to target creature or player, and you gain 2 life.
All right.
But his negative three is target opponent's life total becomes 10.
Whoa.
So I don't care what your life's at. Like,
drop to 10.
Yeah, like our buddy Graham with his tree folk deck and all that crazy like incidental life gain. You're at 100. No, you're at 10 life.
Yeah, this is great against Aloro decks too.
Yep.
Because it essentially, I've had games where people are like, this guy's out of control. He's at the turn 1 Sarah Sun and no one can beat him. And then someone has Soren Markov in their hand. They're like, don't worry. Look, if you can just kill him in one turn before he gets to gain any more life, you're fine. Because Soren Markov's on the table.
Yeah, we got this. Don't worry. And then his ultimate is negative 7, is you control target player during that player's next turn.
I'd rather play Mindslaver.
You just never do this. You just ding another player down to 10. But it's the negative ability that really makes Soren like kind of broken. In fact, he's one of those cards people ask to get. They want him on the watch list, basically.
Oh, really?
Yeah, him with. I don't mind this effect. It doesn't kill them. Ten is you're still in the game.
Yeah, it's a quarter of your life total, but you're not dead.
Yeah.
So,
but it's just very powerful.
I mean, this is obviously again a card that was designed more for the standard modern environment because taking someone's life total down by half, not as big of a deal.
Yeah, never really made any splash, I don't think, in standard, but it's very powerful in our format.
Understandable. Yep. All right, so my number six would be my card draw of the top 10 list, and it is a card I put in almost all my black decks. It is Phyrexian Arena.
Very good card.
Yeah, this card's been printed a bunch of times as well. It's the card draw enchantment for black. It's 1 black, and it says, at the beginning of your upkeep, you draw a card, and you lose 1 life. So you go upkeep, draw, untap.
Untap.
Upkeep, draw. So you're essentially drawing 2 cards a turn, but you're losing 1 life during your upkeep, which is completely not a big deal because it's EDH, of course. And black doesn't have that much card draw.
Well, all its card draw is like this, or it costs you life. But this is just like, you don't have to pay mana also. Mm-hmm. You don't have to do anything else. It's just like, you get 1 extra card.
Yeah, exactly. There are a couple of demons. Maybe there's just 1 demon that also does this as well. But yeah, it's very much in black's color pie to draw a card and lose a life at the same time.
Yep.
1 for 1, usually.
Some are 2 for 1, and some cost mana also, stuff like green.
I mean, the best part about this is you get to put this on turn 3, maybe even turn 2, and it does a great job.
If you get a Phyrexian Arena early in the game, you're very far ahead of every other player.
You're going to draw like 9-10 extra cards off that by the time the game ends, which is pretty impressive.
Okay, number five. My number five is Living Death, which we already talked about. So I just valued it a little bit higher than you did. I'm not sure why.
Why is that, Josh?
I don't know. I just it's an insurrection type effect.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you set it up correctly, a lot of times it's just like, boom, I win.
Yeah, and it's cheaper too.
Yeah, although it's not the type of card you can play on turn five, because usually by turn five you're not ready with enough things in your graveyard for it to work.
Right.
So it ends up happening around the same time Insurrection happens, which is like turn 9 or 10.
Yeah.
Or 11 or 12 or 13. But it's just that type of effect. It's like, I play this card, and if something crazy doesn't happen, a lot of times I can just kill everybody.
Yeah, and it's still a board wipe at 5 mana. And again, black does not have many board wipes, and the most prominent one has never been reprinted, and it costs a lot of money.
Yeah.
So
Damnation. This just costs one more. And a lot of times, maybe you just play it on turn five just to wipe the board, even when nothing's in graveyards. Yeah.
Yeah. And again, it's, you know, being able to build around it and play around it is definitely very powerful. All right. My number five. Boy, we're just cruising through these right now. It's great. I love it.
I love it.
Efficient, fast. Revving the engine. My number five is, I think this is actually probably a bit controversial, because it is, again, similar to Reanimate, a one-time effect that...
this card's very powerful.
Yeah, it's Yawgmoth's Will. It's 2 in the black for a sorcery. This card makes a lot of splashes in Vintage.
Yep.
And Legacy, even?
Probably. I don't know for sure, but it's
2 in the black. It says, until end of turn, you may play cards from your graveyard, and if a card would be put into your graveyard from anywhere this turn, exile that card instead. So
it gives everything in your graveyard flashback till the end of turn.
Yeah, and the big thing
including
here...
Including creatures.
Exactly. So the thing is, your creatures actually come back to the battlefield if you play them this way, and they stay there.
Yep.
Unless they die that same turn. But we talk about win conditions a lot in EDH and being able to close out the game. And Yawgmoth's Will, I think, is one of the best ways to do it, because if you're behind, if you've traded aggressively, if there's a lot of stuff in your graveyard, and if you're playing black, there should be a lot of stuff in your graveyard, this is the kind of card that will absolutely pull you out from if you're behind someone, because you need to play the three things that they got rid of earlier in the game. You need to get your Shieldred back out there, etc. And it also just has... I mean, the power level is insane.
Yeah, I mean, we know how powerful something like Snapcaster Mage is,
mm-hmm.
and this does that even more versatilely. It doesn't leave you with a small creature afterwards, but in EDH, that small creature is not worth a ton.
Yeah.
And again, Snapcaster is different. You can recur it and stuff, but Yawgmoth lets you play, you know, in black, you can do the Cryptghast, Urborg, Cabal Coffers thing and just make like a gajillion mana, and Yawgmoth's Will will often let you play like 3 or 4 or 5 things out of your graveyard, which can be like Living Death, Decree of Pain, like all this stuff we've talked about. And
playing Decree of Pain more than once is backbreaking.
I mean, how can you lose?
Yeah, how can you lose?
Very good card. Another card that I had in contention but didn't quite put on my list.
Oh, really? Nice.
Number four.
Uh-huh.
I notice, it's a little spoiler alert, our top three is... basically the same. This is maybe
basically the same.
This is the closest top three we've ever had. In fact, most of the time we have like
number
different
one
number
was
ones.
A no-brainer for me.
Yeah, me too. In fact, I made my list and just put number one there and then did everything else. But our 1, 2, and 3 are basically the exact same.
Yeah, we'll do it in your order just so we can get so we don't have to repeat anything. But let's see what your number four is first.
Okay, number four. I have Victimize. So this is my reanimation effect.
Mm-hmm.
Victimize is 2 and a black for a sorcery. It says, choose 2 target creature cards in your graveyard. Sacrifice a creature. If you do, return the chosen cards to the battlefield tapped.
Wow.
So you sack one of your creatures and you get 2 out of your graveyard onto the battlefield tapped.
Mm-hmm. It's a 2 for 2 technically, but you can bring any creature back.
So you can do crazy things like discard effects, mill effects to yourself, and then sacrifice a little creature to get 2 really big ones back into play, mm-hmm. or reuse enter the battlefield effects, or just stuff like that. So
notably, this was also in Conspiracy.
Yes, it was.
It's a good card for that draft set as well. You know what? I can understand between Reanimate and this one why this would make it higher on your list. You get 2 creature cards.
It's
That's
crazy.
Pretty crazy. And you can sack the dumbest little thing. You can sack an Eldrazi spawn, okay, a 1-1, a token, and there's lots of cards. You can set Kakushio.
Yep.
Like, there's lots of things in this color that like to do this. And the only reason I didn't have it as high is because it's in your graveyard specifically. I liked having the option of reanimating from anywhere. But, I mean, again, in my Marchesa deck, both of these cards are in there.
And these were the two cards where I was like, which one? And I chose Victimize, but I think it's basically a coin flip which one's better. They're very similar.
And it's about your deck specifically, too, really tell you what's better.
I think most decks that want one want both.
Mm-hmm. All right, top three.
Oh, you didn't say your number four.
Oh, I didn't?
I mean, it's a repeat.
Didn't. Yeah, maybe that's why. My number four was Shieldred, Whispering One. I think the power level on this is so absurd because of what our number three is. It's kind of that same effect. The Edict effect is so powerful in EDH because people are loading up their creatures to be Voltron Commanders. They're doing all sorts of crazy stuff, and this gets around protection. This gets around targeting and hexproof, and Edict effects in general are just so powerful, so that's why Shieldred's so high up for me.
Yeah, you know, it's funny, and I haven't gone back and checked, but I bet if you do, I just have a real hard time putting creatures high on any of my lists for these. Mm-hmm. I'm just not a big creatures player as far as like putting a lot of like faith in them. Because,
into one specific creature.
Because they're just, all decks are built to handle creatures. So it's just, you know, as powerful as Shieldred is, I'm just always worried like if I put a lot of stock in that card, it'll just get removed and then what?
Mm-hmm.
So it's funny to see our personalities come out as we're doing these top 10 lists, because I bet you just on average have creatures higher on these lists than I do.
Yeah, I bet so. I bet.
Yeah. It's just a personality thing, because I don't think you're wrong, because when you talk about Shieldred, I'm like, yeah, she does all that stuff and she's really powerful. And why the hell do I have her at 10? I should have had her higher. So, yeah. All right. So we're going to talk about the top three. Our orders are just slightly different.
Yeah, our threes and twos are flipped, but it could go either way looking at them.
Okay, well, so at three, I have Grave Pact / Dictate of Erebos, and I noticed you did the / thing, too, because it's basically the same
card.
Yeah,
when I copy-paste my list in, I was like, yep, that looks about right. They're both essentially the same card.
Yeah, they're both enchantments. Dictate of Erebos costs a little more and has Flash, but they both say whenever a creature you control dies, your opponents have to sacrifice a creature.
Each other player, sacrifices a creature, which is, if you think about it, again, ridiculous.
Yeah, so you sack Kokusho, and then just as an ancillary benefit, everybody else has to sack one of their creatures. Mm-hmm. Yeah, or any of your creatures just die for whatever reason, everybody else has to.
Yeah, now the reason that this is slightly less powerful is because token decks exist.
Yep.
But at the same time, if it's one token deck and three other people that aren't token decks, you're still really controlling the board. The fact that you can do this at instant speed, someone goes to combat, they decide to swing at you, be like, all right, I'm going to sack this Eldrazi spawn to give myself a colorless, and everyone has to kill a creature.
It's crazy. Or just having a sacrifice outlet on the table, you can just take care of anything. Like, people play two creatures, you just sack two of yours to kill everything. Yeah. These are the type of locks that black decks can get, where they've got a Grave Pact out and a sack outlet, and it's just like nobody can get anything to stay on the board.
Yeah, and like an Awakening Zone or a Creekwood Liege or just any card that...
Shieldred, because you just bring something back and sack it. Bring something back and sack it every turn.
What if you brought back a Merciless Executioner? So it's
they're
double.
Sacking like three things. Yeah. One to Shieldred, one to the Grave Pact, one to the Merciless Executioner. Yeah. Like, if you have that, like, no creatures are staying on the board for your opponents, basically.
Mm-hmm. And again, like, I'd say the majority of decks are still winning by traditional means, which is beat your face in with a creature. So this really gets around a lot of that stuff. One commander in specific that it does not get around, Sigarda.
Sigarda. Yeah. Sigarda doesn't care about these cards.
Yeah, and that's, again, another... If you think about it, I feel like this should be one of the most played effects in EDH because it's so powerful, but you don't see it that often. But that's why cards like Sigarda are so good, is because they can stop this from happening for that player specifically.
All right, so your number three, which is my number two, you want to read it?
Yeah, it is Necropotence, however you say it.
Necropotence.
Necropotence. We talk about this card a lot in the show. It's a fiery one. The reason I had it at three and not two is because this sometimes can backfire on you.
It definitely can backfire on you, but it is so powerful.
Yeah, it's a black for an enchantment. It says skip your draw step, so you know you're in for a ride already. Whenever you discard a card, exile that card from your graveyard. Okay, I wonder why it says that. Because it says pay one life, exile the top card of your library face down. Put that card into your hand at the beginning of your next end step. So you're skipping your draw step entirely, and instead you're drawing cards. It kind of reverses the turn order for you. You draw your end step, And anytime you have to discard a card, by the way, cleanup comes after the end step. So if you draw more than 7 cards into your hand, every card you discard to the hand size limit is going to get exiled. Yep. So,
but it's one life per card.
Yeah.
For the rest of the game.
What's another card that was banned that does something similar? Oh, right. Grizzlebrand.
Yeah. yeah, because you can do the Grizzlebrand effect. Just pay 7 life, draw 7 cards,
mm-hmm.
Which is super, super powerful. Yeah, this card is broken bonkers. When people get this on turn 3, it's just like, I don't know how you lose that game. It's,
yeah, and it's hard to cast on turn 3 for 3 color decks and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
But, oh my gosh.
Yeah, that's the reason I had it so high, is just because this level of card draw is, and it's on an enchantment.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like Consecrated Sphinx power, but it's way harder to remove.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it does some really interesting stuff, because even just exiling the top card of your library face down is somewhat powerful.
It also gets around like Nekusar type things, because you're not actually drawing that card, you're exiling it and then putting it into your hand. So
yeah.
It has some, I don't know, some additional benefit for stuff like that.
Yeah, well, skipping your draw step isn't that great, but this does work great with a card like Phyrexian Arena, because it draws you a card during your upkeep.
And Rhystic Study, Mind's Eye. You can have a lot of ways to draw cards that are outside of your draw step.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's very, very powerful, very good.
Yep, and definitely top 3 material for both of us here. And we both have the exact same card for number 1. If you guys haven't guessed it, can you? This card starts with the letter T.
Boop, 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 boom, boom.
And it rhymes with Schmockschick Schmeluge. It's Toxic Deluge. The best board wipe in black. Outside of Damnation.
One of the best board wipes, period.
Yeah, I think it's actually
better
the
best. Than Damnation.
I agree.
Yeah, let's read it. It's 2 and a black for a sorcery. It says, as an additional cost to cast Toxic Deluge. I always say Deluge. I don't know why.
It's both. I don't know. Whatever.
As an additional cost, pay X life. All creatures get -X/-X until end of turn.
This is 2 and a black for a board wipe that could kill a 15/15 if you have enough life.
Yep, and it can kill an indestructible 15/15. Mm-hmm. It could kill Ulamog because it does say -X/-X to all creatures. Also, it gets around things like Gaddock Teague.
Oh, yeah.
Let's say you can't...
No board wipe gets around. Almost none, I think.
Yeah, Gaddock Teague's, like, that type of effect is super painful because he's doesn't allow you to cast non-creature spells that cost 4 or more mana, mm-hmm. and there just aren't very many board wipes that cost less than 4 mana. This is one of them. It's just very, very useful. It's very efficient. The loss of life is not as big a deal in EDH. Yeah. I can't think of how many times I'm just like, man.
This is the one card I get the most with our other supposed number 1 card, Demonic Tutor. I almost always tutor for a Toxic Deluge. I'd say probably 60% of the time I get Toxic Deluge if it's still in my library.
It's, you never are mad when you have it. You very often are like, man, I hope I draw it. Like, mm-hmm. it's just the answer in so many situations.
And you can do it for -5/-5 if you have 6/6s on the board. You know, it's up to you. And the fact that you can just pay 2 in the black is the biggest part, because you get to choose how big it is based on your life total. Also, notably, it was only printed once ever in the Commander 23 sets, which means it's a Wizard's creation, and the power level is pretty up there.
Yeah, it's a little spendy right now. I wonder if they'll put it in the new this year's Commander product.
I mean, I hope so, because it definitely is not cheap anymore.
Every black deck wants this card.
Every deck that plays black wants this card. Yeah. It is the best board wipe in black, bar none. Damnation is cool because it is a black board wipe, but it is not Toxic Deluge. At least for EDH, it's not.
Yeah, it costs 1 more mana. It doesn't kill indestructible stuff,
mm-hmm.
Which is way worse than a little bit of loss of life. So, yep. And it's funny that we had such a similar top 3, but people are
going to
disagree with us, but I like our picks. At least
I
our
like
top
our
3.
Pick. Yeah, I do too.
We want to talk about a couple honorable mentions?
Yes. And your first honorable mention is actually something I completely forgot to play or put on my list, because I may have put this on there.
Well, because I was looking for ramp cards, right? And mm-hmm. the 2 I had were Cryptghast and this. Cryptghast is not as good in decks that aren't heavy black.
Right.
And so that's why I was looking for something that still worked.
There's also the Nekrona Revenant, right?
Yeah.
It does something very similar.
Very similar. Just more expensive.
Yeah.
So Black Market is one of my honorable mentions. It's an enchantment for 3 and 2 black. It says, whenever a creature dies, put a charge counter on Black Market. At the beginning of your pre-combat main phase, add black to your mana pool for each charge counter on black market. So
this thing gets up big. I got this to like 27 in the game.
If you're at 27, you're just getting 27 black mana every turn from it.
In your first main phase, yeah.
I mean, it's crazy. That's when you play Yawgmoth's Will and just win.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's a very good ramp. It's a little bit spendy, this card. I think it's in the $20 range.
I think it's actually less. I got Does it come down? Yeah, 10 to 15, I think is where it's
at. Not bad. For a while, it was a little bit higher. It's very powerful. A lot of decks, and especially if you're sacking your own creatures and you're just guaranteed putting counters on it. In the Shadowborn Apostles deck, it's very, very strong.
I don't think people realize how good this card is, because every time I played it on our boards in our meta, people usually target like the doubling season, and this is just as dangerous.
It really can be, especially if you have card draw, then you can just dump everything in your hand out on the table every
time. Well, the nice thing is at first it just gets that one or two, and people are like, whatever, two extra mana, not a big deal. And then when it gets to 14 and 15, pretty good.
Yeah, it's pretty good. So that was my first honorable mention.
Yeah. The honorable mention I want to talk about is Contamination.
Oh, yeah.
It's kind of like Blood Moon in a lot of ways, so of course I like it. It's two in the black for an enchantment. It says, at the beginning of your upkeep, sacrifice Contamination unless you sacrifice a creature. So it's a bit... it asks a little bit of you. And it says, if a land is tapped for mana, it produces black mana instead of any other type and amount. So you don't even get to get your Ancient Tomb to tap for two. It only produces a black mana.
It's basically the Black Blood Moon.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's brutal.
It's brutal.
The only saving grace is that it's a little bit hard to keep it up. But, I mean, if you've got a reoccurring or...
recurring skeleton, reassembling skeleton of sorts.
Or just like or a token maker. Yeah,
yeah.
Bitter Blossom or Awakening Zone or something that's just making you a creature every turn, then...
Pretty good.
Yeah, you can basically shut everybody out. It's good. My second one is Entomb.
Oh, yeah, this is a great card.
Entomb is one black for an instant. It says, search your library for a card and put that card into your graveyard, then shuffle your library. So it's like this weird tutor, but it doesn't put it into your hand, it puts it into your graveyard. So
black doesn't care.
Black doesn't care, and also there are just a lot of cards you want in your graveyard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can throw Anger.
Yeah, so you can. This Genesis. Can be like, give all your creatures haste.
Yeah.
This can be like
for one black mana too. Yeah, at instant speed. That's great.
It can also say give all your creatures flying or give them all swamp walk, or it can say all kinds of things because there are creatures that like being in there. Also, yeah, it can just be a tutor. Like put it in there, reanimate it.
Mm-hmm.
So you can get Shieldred out for two mana. So it's very powerful. And it's actually a really unique effect.
You could technically do it if you only had one black mana by casting it at the end of someone else's turn and then playing reanimate.
Yeah, you could do this turn one.
Mm-hmm.
So you play your swamp on the end step before your turn, you entomb, put Shieldred into your graveyard, and then on your second turn, boom, you reanimate Shieldred. Oh, man.
You are on the way to making no friends at the table.
I mean, I can hear the groans from here.
My next honorable mention was Oversold Cemetery, one in the black enchantment, and it says, at the beginning of your upkeep, if you have four or more creature cards in your graveyard, you may return target creature card from your graveyard to your hand. And I like this because it's one in the black. It's a very cheap enchantment to get out. And the flavor is great, too. The cemetery is just, there's too many dead people, and they need to get rid of some of the carcasses, and it goes back to your hand for some reason.
Well, what else are they going to do with them?
Yeah, clearly.
They oversold the cemetery, man. We got to give some of these back. All right, my last honorable mention is Machias the Unhallowed.
Oh, yeah. So Big Daddy Machias.
Big Daddy Machias. This is the evil Machias. There is a nice one. The evil one, Machias the Unhallowed, is 3/3 black, so 6 mana total for a 5/5 legendary creature, zombie cleric. This is actually a very good commander, too. Mm-hmm. Has Intimidate. It says, whenever a human deals damage to you, destroy it. Pretty good. And then it says, other non-human creatures you control get +1/+1 and have Undying.
Oh, gosh.
So Undying is when a creature with Undying dies, if it had no +1/+1 counters on it, return it to the battlefield under its owner's control with a +1/+1 counter on it.
I wonder what commander likes this card a lot.
Marchesa.
Hello.
Yeah, Marchese.
Marchese.
Machias is just infamous for going infinite with a whole bunch of different things.
Yeah, Triskelion specifically.
Yeah, but there's a lot of things that go infinite with Machias, and so he's just a very powerful card for combo decks. If that's the type of thing you want to do, Machias is a guy that does it.
Undying is really, really strong.
That's the thing. Even if you're not going infinite, it's just like all your guys, when they die, just come back. So think about like...
Unless they're humans, but...
Yeah, think about like Kokusho.
Oh boy.
I sack him. Everybody takes 5. I gain 20. Kokushu comes back. I sack him again. Everybody takes 5 more. I gain 20. Now I reanimate him. I sack him. He comes back with Undying because he doesn't have a counter. Like, yeah. You can go nuts with like that kind of loop. It's not infinite, but it's still just going to kill everybody.
It's good enough.
Yeah.
Yeah, Macias is definitely one of the most powerful black cards in existence. Although the only reason I don't like it as much as Shieldred is just because it takes a little more setup. Shieldred just, as soon as they pass turn, it immediately goes into effect. There's nothing else you have to do. You know, you need to sack anything. You just need to watch everyone go, no, why?
Yeah, I agree. Shieldred is in general better, but Macias does some pretty crazy broken things. Yeah.
And they're both great for mono black decks if you guys want to build that and be evil. My last honorable mention would be the card I've talked about a couple of times on this show, this episode specifically. It's Massacre Worm.
Oh, yeah.
3/3 black for a creature worm. When Massacre Worm enters the battlefield, creatures your opponents control get -2/-2 until end of turn. And whenever a creature an opponent controls dies, that player loses 2 life. So the reason that this card is awesome is, I mean, it's not a permanent effect like Elesh Norm where everyone gets -2/-2, but it is just your opponent's creatures. And it's a great flicker target.
Yeah, super great flipper. And it just, a lot of incidental life gain.
Mm-hmm.
It does just kill.
Well, life loss for everyone else.
Oh yeah, life loss.
Because as soon as those creatures die, Massacre Worm's already on the table. So anything it kills that's mice, like if you're a token deck and you have 10 creatures that you just lose 20 life immediately.
I mean, that's crazy.
Yeah, it's pretty insane.
Plus your whole board.
Yeah, your whole board as well. So Massacre Worm's great. I think it's just underrated in general because it's a one-time effect, and people don't like those as much. But this is EDH. We have many ways of getting around all that.
This is EDH, baby.
EDH, baby. Don't even think about it.
All right, so that's our top 10 black cards.
Nice. Did you guys agree? Disagree? Let us know.
Yeah, please go to the comment section on Rocket Jump.
Or on YouTube.
Or on YouTube. We do prefer Rocket Jump, but you can do it on YouTube also. And give us your top 10 list of your top 10 black cards. We always like to continue the discussion there. There's been a lot of cards that have come up on the other episodes for the other colors and for artifacts where I'm like, man, I didn't even think of that card.
Yeah.
That card probably should be on there. And it's good for listeners that come along, you know, weeks, months, years down the line, and they can also see what other people thought. And, you know, we're not saying we're 100% right.
We're never 100% right.
We're like 99.2% right, though.
Yeah, we want you guys to tell us what we're missing here because
then I'll put it in my deck and my deck will be way better.
Yeah, seriously. And of course, there is a couple of cards, like we talked about before, that are just too expensive for this list. So don't
be Nether Void, we know. The Abyss. Yeah, we know. Yeah, we know about those cards. They're $200. Like,
yeah,
they don't count.
I just bought 7 of them instead of buying 8 decks or whatever else you could do with that money.
All right, ready for the end step?
I'm never ready for the end step, but you know what, Josh? I am ready for the end step.
That sounded like an oxymoron.
Yeah, I know. You know what? My end step is going to be a personal update. As many of you may know, I fundraised for a show called Band-Aid back in November. And it's the show is a musical comedy, and I'm in the process of creating it right now. And some people have been asking for some updates, so I posted some stuff to Twitter today. I'll post some stuff to the official Band-Aid page as well. Just wanted to let everyone know where I'm at with it. We have just finished the 5th draft of the first episode of the season. We have the whole season all outlined out, and everything's ready to go. But the pilot, I had no idea writing it was going to be as much of a hand in like hand on face palming, just hit your head against the wall as many times as you can, because you're trying to do so much setup and exposition in the pilot and also keep it interesting and funny and true to the show and true to the characters. And at the same time, the characters, like, you can just feel them like putting their hands on their hips and being like, and this is what happened in the past, so you can understand the rest of the show. So it's been quite the process, but we just finished our 5th draft, and of course the best draft by far. And I have a hard deadline for myself set right now to finish a first draft of the whole season. The first episode was by far the hardest, and I know for a fact that the rest are going to be much easier by July. And we hope to go into production in August. So that's the status of Band-Aid. Very exciting and very tiring. Revisions, man. Lots of revisions.
I don't know if any of you out there have ever tried an endeavor of this size, and I will refute Jimmy's assertion that the rest of the episodes will be easier.
Oh, good.
No, it's not. They won't be easier. I know. They will be difficult.
Everything's gonna be difficult. I'm just saying that to make myself feel better.
Yeah. And people who are asking about updates, that's great because there was a Indiegogo. But they should realize too that the process of doing something of this size and magnitude, it just takes a lot of time. And there's no reason to do it if you don't take the time right now to make those scripts good.
Yeah.
So that's...
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I may as well just not do the show if exactly. I'm not going to spend the right time. Exactly. No one really wants
that. So anybody that did, you know, contribute to the Indiegogo, that's awesome. You know, but you want Jimmy doing exactly what he's doing. And I know for a fact he's working really hard on it. But you want him to make sure that the script is really in a great place before you start rolling any sort of camera.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Because otherwise, all the money, you will just be like, why am I spending
it on this? It's just pointless.
Yeah, you want to do the best you can before you go anywhere.
So my end step is way less cool than yours.
I'm sure that's not true. But
No, it is. Because yours is really cool. Because yours is an awesome creative endeavor. Mine is I ate a lot of tacos this weekend.
yes, okay.
Gotcha. If you follow my Twitter, you saw me post pictures of about 14 tacos because I went to this taco...
It was mouthwatering following your Twitter that
day. It was amazing. Yeah, so there was this taco festival in Los Angeles. There's a very famous street in downtown LA. It's called Olivera Street. It's actually very close to where we record this podcast. And I think LA Weekly sponsored this really big taco vendor festival thing. Tons of people there. There was a lot of taco vendors from all over. They came from San Francisco. They came up from Mexico. They all had different taco styles. If you go to my Twitter account, there I've got pictures of like some amazing tacos.
They look so good. I'd never seen tacos like that either. I was like, whoa.
Yeah, it was not like
crazy style.
Yeah, it was like gourmet tacos. I mean, the Koji truck, which is like a very big famous taco truck that kind of started this gourmet food truck revolution that we have. It's by a guy named Roy Choi, who's actually like sort of the movie Chef with Jon Favreau. Roy Choi is like one of the consultants and one of the inspirations for that movie. He was there with his tacos. Anyway, I had a really awesome time. I ate way too much food. I ate 14 tacos. That was my cool thing that happened.
Yeah, and I got the invite a little too late, but I'm definitely coming.
Yeah, I'm sorry. This thing happened where I'm like, Jimmy, do you want to go to this taco thing? He's like, taco thing? Yeah. And I was like...
I love tacos.
Yeah, I was like... Oh, sorry. I just found out that you have to have bought the tickets like weeks ago. And he was like, well, how'd you get your tickets? And I was like, well, my girlfriend thought ahead because I wouldn't have.
Yeah,
so.
I definitely did not.
Yeah. Next year.
Yeah, it's crazy. Tons of things like this happen every year in LA. There's a beer crawl that I'm very much looking forward to in August that happens. I missed the last 2 years, but it's one of my favorite events. It's very similar.
Did you get your tickets ahead of time this time?
No, they haven't gone on sale yet, I don't think.
Oh,
maybe they have. Uh-oh.
Start hitting that refresh button right, like right
I
now.
I got to start refreshing. I got to look it up right now, actually. And that means we are done with the episode for today. We are into the cleanup phase, and that means we're discarding the thousands of cards we drew with Necropotence, whatever. make sure you guys check out the Masters of Modern. Alex Kessler, Ben Bateman are very good friends. Ben did very well in GP Vegas. He placed in the top 100, got some money. They talk about Modern because they know the format very well. And they're also brewers, and they're also really smart.
And they have really good guests.
They have great guests, actually. They have a ton lined up post-GP because they got to meet a lot of these people, which is awesome. They're talking to pro players, writers, deck brewers, and all that stuff. And they've done stuff with a bunch of already pretty well-known figures in the community as well. So make sure you guys check out their podcast. They're a sister podcast. You can find them on rocketjump.com/podcast or at the MMcast on Twitter. And that's my cleanup phase.
All right, make sure to go give us those iTunes reviews.
Yes, please. Please.
Well, that just sounds pathetic. Go do it.
We need some
I'm taking
iTunes
a different
reviews.
Tact. I'm just going to order them. Go give us reviews.
Do it.
Yeah, do
everything.
Do it now.
Do everything.
Do it now.
Do it now, man.
Look for the chopper.
You can do it. I love that guy.
All right, everybody.
My hero growing up.
Head for the chopper. I don't know what that has to do with iTunes reviews.
And one last thing before we depart, we have a very exciting announcement. Magic Origins spoilers have started. If you guys don't know, this is the final core set that Wizards of the Coast is ever going to release for Magic the Gathering. And we have an exclusive spoiler for you guys, but not until June 29th, which is next Monday. We're going to be spoiling an all-new card. It's really sweet. We can't tell you anything about it now, but make sure you tune in on Monday. We're also going to be discussing the 5 legendary Planeswalker cards that have been spoiled so far. We're going to talk about their uses in EDH as well. So it's going to be a Magic Origins spoiler-filled episode next Monday, June 29th. That's 4 days from now, instead of our normal release day on Tuesdays. We'll still have an episode on Thursday as well. So I hope you guys are looking forward to it. I know I am. The card we have is super sweet. We'll see you next time.
Peace.
Thank you for your attention. For further inquiries, send an email to commandcast@rocketjump.com. or ask us on Twitter at JF Wong and at Josh Lee Kwai. See you later, alligator.
Greetings, humans.